a new petrochemical giant is quietly being born in Russia, where Sibur and TAIF are merging their petrochemicals operations. This will create a global top 10 player in ethylene and with a strong position in plastics and rubber. I'm Will Beecham, and also in this week's podcast, new first quarter data on China polypropylene and styrene gives us some clues about how the industry is performing there. And Joe Biden's Earth Summit brings a low carbon future soaring back up the global political agenda. What does this mean for chemicals? With me to discuss these important topics this week, I'm joined by our regular panellists, Nigel Davis, our Insight Editor, Paul Hodges, Chairman of New Normal Consulting, and John Richardson, our Senior Consultant based in Asia. Well, Nigel, let's start with you first of all. What exactly have Sibur and TAIF agreed to do, and how powerful would the merged group be on the global petrochemical landscape?
Well, Will, at the moment, it's Sibur taking us. TAIF shareholders are going to receive a 15% stake in the joint stock company Sibur in exchange for a controlling interest in the Tatarstan holdings that TAIF has in refining and in petrochemicals, rather than not refining. So TAIF owns 50% of the big refining and petchems operation in Nizhnekamsk and the Kazan Org Synthes, which is a polymer producer, and also in Tatarstan. So they use a lot of oil, but also some LPG and gas to produce chemicals. A long-standing refining and petrochemicals complex, or refining and petrochemicals complexes. But they're in the middle of a big investment, $20 billion, so a $20 billion investment to upgrade ethylene capacity from with a new naphtha cracker. And also, obviously, to upgrade the facilities. And the big thing, I think, in Russia at the moment is, you know, international competitiveness. It's not just producing petrochemicals and polymers for the domestic market anymore. It's trying to counter, to some extent, imports, cheap imports, but also to actually play a bigger role on the world stage. And I'm thinking here about, we've got a massive petrochemicals project, which has got nothing to do with this. There's a massive petrochemicals project in the Baltic, for instance, which is going ahead at the moment. But also this deal particularly, Sibur, remember, has invested quite heavily first in PDH and then in polymers in Russia. And this sort of, basically, as I said, is 15% in TAIF. And then the idea would be for this new company to actually take over the whole of the TAIF chemicals or petrochemicals operations. If it did that, and if the investments go ahead as planned, then it would be the fifth largest producer of plastics and rubber in the world. And also it would be in the top 10 in terms of ethylene production globally. So it would be on the lines of size, sort of. There's quite a few companies there, but I mean Braskem and Formosa, companies like that. So it's a significant player, really significant ethylene player. But particularly interesting, I think, is the fact that Sibur is largely LPG based, so gas based, whereas TAIF or TAIF is based on crude oil processing. So, you know, there's a lot to learn between these two companies, and it's all about competitiveness. It's all about trying to raise the competitiveness of the combined group to invest further in Tatarstan and to actually sort of rejuvenate, I think, wouldn't be too strong a word, but to rejuvenate some of the sort of Russian petrochemical industry, particularly as pertaining to these two parts of the country.
Yeah, you mentioned that the merged group might try to look to access export markets. Do you have any idea what kind of markets they might aim at? We've got the Belt and Road Initiative. There's Europe as well, which I know Sibur has been interested in. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's not quite so certain at the moment. I think, you know, the Russian companies are concerned about their competitiveness on these export markets. You know, they see there's the tariff situation and the tax situation in Russia itself, which they've been lobbying for some sort of equalization this past year. Remember, they were quite hard hit by the pandemic, or very hard hit by the pandemic. So therefore, I think what it's another story here is it's the pandemic has given them the opportunity to actually start to rethink things and to think, you know, we need to be competitive on in a global sense, not just in a Russian sense. We need to be competitive on the global stage, because if we're not, then we're going to face increasing pressure from imports, which are going to impact our business over the coming years.
Thanks, Nigel. And I think they will probably face WTO tariffs on exports to Europe and China, which are up to 6.5%, because there's no trade deal in place. John, I'd like to turn to you now. The ICIS supply and demand database is now giving us some indications about how China polypropylene and styrene performed in the first quarter of 2021. What have you found out?
Oh, well, it's what I've been sort of warning about since January, that first of all, a bit of context, just ignore all year-on-year comparisons for the first quarter. I mean, really erroneous. Because, of course, the first quarter of last year was dreadful. China's in the middle of the pandemic, and anything in the first quarter of this year is bound to be better. So what really, really matters is understanding whether that momentum from last year, late last year, had been carried forward into 2021. And first of all, we had some GDP numbers that came out last week, week before last, which showed that actually GDP growth in the first quarter of this year versus the fourth quarter of last year was the lowest in a decade, excluding pandemic. So it's gone from 3.6% in Q4 last year to 0.6% in Q1 this year. So we know some momentum's been lost. Now, the petrochemicals is a really good proxy for the overall economy, as we know. So in polypropylene, demand was down by 5%. That's net imports plus production. Net imports were down by 41%. And actually, imports were down by 32%. And local production was up by 4%. Styrene saw a slight fall in local production and a less dramatic fall in imports. But its demand, apparent demand, was by 2%, down by 2%. High-density polyethylene, same story. Imports were sharply down by 30-odd%. And apparent demand, net imports plus local production, was down by 8%. So these are quite significant numbers. Let's unpack them. I mean, polypropylene, partly it's because lots of stuff was exported from China in March. Big increase in exports over February because of the better netbacks elsewhere. But that's not the story in styrene and HDPE, because there's hardly any exports from China in any market conditions. So what it really says is we've lost some growth momentum. It's quite clear. Could be to do with the container freight shortages, the semiconductor issues be affecting styrenics, electronics, perhaps a bit in PP and autos as well. And the ability of China to maintain that awesome export growth, finished goods, which is really behind its recovery last year. Remember, the local economy was smaller than before the pandemic. So that suggestion that there's something around supply chains that we don't quite understand, we don't have the data, nobody's clear. The government's slowing down the availability of new credit. The total social financing figures in the first quarter were down, which suggests the government's taken advantage of strong growth last year to finally address the big bad debt problems and the rising inequality, income inequality, which has been caused by the recovery from the pandemic, a new property bubble, for example. So, as I said, I've been worrying about this since January, and now we've got the firm petchem data that seems to support that. Finally, self-sufficiency, and last but absolutely not least, is in polypropylene, HDP, and in styrene, we're seeing big capacity additions in China this year, hence rising production. And I think this is a sign, the first quarter data is a sign that we'll see lower imports this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what kind of clues does the data give us for the rest of the year? Does it tell us anything else?
Well, it depends when supply chains will normalize. Lots of theories about that. The theory is that if people emerge from lockdowns in the West, it'll get worse as people buy more stuff. You know, all this government stimulus floating around may encourage high consumer spending. That's one theory. Semiconductor issue is probably won't be sorted till the end of the year at best. The best outcome, I think, for containers is probably sometime into the second half of this year, it'll be sorted out. So that could be, continue to be a drag on China's exports. We really don't know. Huge grey areas in China. I think the other issue is whether the Chinese government sticks to its guns and maintains lower credit growth. Is any sign of the economy decelerating that may turn on the credit tap again? That's a possibility. Then perhaps we're back to the party. But what it does show is the importance of the right data comparisons. Year on year, as I said, is a waste of time. And the importance of digging deeper into China. There are many gaps in the data. This is I'm working with what I have available, which is not a lot. But what's clear is we do need better data on China. So important for the global pet chem business.
Thanks, John, for that China update. Now we'll turn to Paul. At last week's Earth Summit, Joe Biden committed the US to halving carbon emissions by 2030. And other world leaders took part, and tackling climate change has been catapulted up the global political agenda. This means accelerated adoption of non-fossil fuel transport, such as electric vehicles, and lowering carbon emissions by industry. What do you think this means for the chemical industry, Paul?
I think this is the tipping point, Will. As of Thursday, Friday last week, there is now absolutely no way that plastics can continue to operate on a single-use model. We have to move to recycling. Now, why do I say that? Well, the first is purely around carbon emissions, that we, as an industry in plastics, produce around 250 million tonnes of CO2, which is equal to 50 million cars. So that's a pretty major issue. And secondly, companies are all now making sustainability commitments. They're all now making commitments on CO2, and of course, banks are refusing to support projects that are not going to be going in that direction. So we now have this great moment for the next 18 months where suddenly chemical companies are faced with the opportunity to develop a whole new business model around recycling. And so we're going to see, I think, a lot of innovation, a lot of money spent, and you know, this is going to be as exciting as it was 20 years ago when we first got into e-business and the complete change in business models that e-business brought about. You know, it's hard if you look back from today to remember just what we were doing with pen and paper, and we had no e-business whatsoever 20 years ago. Now we're full of it, and that is going to be exactly the same with recycled plastic.
And what's your view on the types of models of plastic recycling that would work most effectively in the push towards a circular economy?
Well, this is the great thing, really, Will, and I talk about it on the blog this week, because we now move as an industry away from looking over our shoulder at supply and saying cost curves are important and we must be near supply. So supply is irrelevant now, because supply is already out there with the consumer, domestic and industrial. It's called waste plastic at the moment. So that's our supply. And so what we need to do now is to move to a world where we understand how to collect and that current waste product and turn it into value. So this is the great commercial opportunity, that at the moment this not only has no value, it has a negative value as waste, because you have to pay to put this valuable plastic in the ground as waste. And Instead, what's going to happen is that you will get paid to take that recycled product and put it through a recycling unit. And the first stage that you'll do is you'll put it through a pyrolysis unit, and you'll then send it to a cracker, and it will be put through the cracker as a naphtha type feedstock. But the second stage, which won't really take very much longer, well, just got to develop the whole systems to do this, but you'll start off in the major cities, and you'll be taking that pyrolysis type feed to a central hub point, and there you'll be processing it into plastic again. And next door to it, you'll have a plastic converter with 3D printing, and you'll make the local products for London, for Lisbon, for Frankfurt, to Paris, for Berlin, for Madrid, and so on. You'll do all that locally, and then you will have this great circular economy. So you won't be needing oil and gas imported from around the world. You don't need a centralized system anymore. This will all be a local distributed operation. It's a fantastic opportunity.
I'm just wondering what's holding it back. You know, we've only got around 10% of plastics recycled globally, as you point out, compared to 70% for paper, steel, glass, etc. What's holding it back? Is it lack of investment, technology?
I think it's been the concept of business as usual. And, you know, for 5 or 6 years now, people have been aware of the problem of waste plastic. They've been aware of the issue with people worrying about what happens to CO2, but they've seen it as, well, the risk is doing something new. If I go to my boss and it doesn't quite work, does that ruin my career? On the other hand, what we're seeing now is the risk is, if I don't do this, I'm going to be out of business, because companies are just not going to be able to continue to use virgin plastic in this way in 5 and 10 years' time. They won't be able to meet their CO2 emissions. So the risk has now gone in the other direction, that if we don't do this, we're probably out of business. If we do this, hey, it's going to be rather profitable and good news.
Thank you, Paul. Before we go, I should mention that the third ICIS Recycling and Sustainability Conference is taking place as we speak. And I'll put notes about how to subscribe and access that conference in the notes for this podcast. Thanks very much to Paul, Nigel and John. And if you want to subscribe to our podcast, it's easy. Just go to any podcast app and search on ICIS Chemicals Podcasts.